All right, welcome to WrestleSpective Radio. I'm Jason Mann, and with me as always is Josh Hatchett. And we're here to talk about a few things that have been going on in the news this week. TNA Impact signaled retreat in the Monday Night Wars. It is moving back to Thursday night. They tried a couple months of being head-to-head, they were head-to-head briefly with Raw, and they moved from 9 p.m. to 8 p.m. and had the 1 hour, and it didn't do significantly better, so they've decided to give up. It's been sort of a rough, the TV for the most part has been kind of rough. They had one strong episode with the crowning of Rob Van Dam as champion, but even in that episode, they, you know, kind of hot-shotted the Jeff Hardy and Rob Van Dam match, which, you know, presumably could have been a, you know, good pay-per-view drawing match. They did that without any build, and then they immediately, or, you know, later the show did the Van Dam won the title shot and then won the title. So, you know, even in a, you know, focused, hot, you know, little BS show that they had, it's still... You know, it's like, you know, what do you do kind of following that? You can't do that kind of show every week. So
yeah, they definitely they had little margin for error for bad shows, and they had plenty of them.
They had a lot of errors. So. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, Orlando Jordan.
I kind of
understand why you do a controversial character, and I think you can do that a little bit, but I think they've. They've gone awry with how they've handled it.
They definitely don't have the guys in charge or in creative to come up with a controversial character that's going to work. You know, if you
right.
had certain guys in there that, you know, have a good track record of doing something like that, then maybe you do it. But you know, this was doomed to fail with, you know, guys like Russo and even guys like Hogan, who's still stuck in, you know, 15 years ago,
yeah.
style of booking.
The mid-side of the mindset of the late 90s. And I do think, you know, I mean, obviously TNA has emphasized the things that the PG WWE has not emphasized. I mean, they've done blood, they've done more adult angles, but it's like, they can't just do, like, a little bit. Like, every single show has to have, you know, blood in one or two matches. I mean, Flair was bleeding every match there, practically.
Yeah.
It was sad. You know, they just, you know, they have to, instead of just adding, like, a little bit of those things and, you know, making an angle here have a little more edge and having a little bit more impact, it's like they do it completely across the entire thing, and it, you know, by then nothing is impact. It's like, you know, if you're a band and you every single note you're playing as loud as you possibly can,
it's not going to sound loud,
right? There's no dynamics. You need dynamics in a wrestling show. You need, you know, here's your matches. You're just, you know, your basic solid, okay, this guy's going to beat this guy in a few minutes, and you're going to, you know, give him a decent, kind of exciting, but not too exciting match, and then you kind of build, you know, to a crescendo, and you might go down a bit, and then you might go back up for the main event, you know, just depending how the show is structured. But I, you know, when you have every single thing playing as loud as it can, you know, nothing is going to get over.
Yeah, it's people are just going to have a giant headache.
Yeah.
You know, from all of it. And you know, you're right about the you know, they wanted to add, you know, a little something more adult oriented, but just because you have a mass amount of blood doesn't mean it's going to be any good. You know, you got to have something that tells a story along with it, or you can't just say, okay, we're going to have these guys bleed like crazy so people will watch it. You know, I don't really care to watch a lot of blood if it's not in a good story or it's not in a good match or anything like that. You know, if someone's going to bleed, you know, that's fine. You know, whatever. You know, maybe it's an intense match and then you'll kind of get into it a little bit more. But when to have Ric Flair blading after every angle and every show and just for, you know, a punch here or there, or somebody runs in and punches him and he's already bleeding, it's just, it's absolutely silly. And,
yeah.
You know, like we've said, you know, TNA had no margin for error, and they knew this, you know, coming in, that they had to be on their game, and you know, they clearly weren't. It's just you know, I really wanted to give it a chance, but it just, you know, they clearly had no idea what they were doing in this situation.
So. Yeah, well, you know, that Abyss Flair match in particular was pretty sad. Yeah. Just watching Flair go out there, you know, Flair, he's 61, 62 now. It's, I'm okay with doing something maybe like in a tag situation once or twice a year. And, yeah. You know, and having him out there, he has value. I mean, he can be a mouthpiece, but, you know, you don't focus the entire show around him and Hogan and, you know, and Sting and, you know, every other old guy, you know, guy that's over 40, most of them are over 50 now. I mean, you know, Hall and Nash, you know, won the tag titles at this taping. And in and of itself, you know, it's like, it's the tag titles, it doesn't matter that much. But, you know, you're focusing on old guys, and that takes the TV time away from, you know, the Motor City Machine Guns, who, you know, are so talented. I mean, they're good in the ring, you know. Alex Shelley in particular is an awesome personality. I mean, I realize they're small guys, but, you know, they carry themselves as stars. They have charisma. They have talent. They, you know, have exciting athletic matches. And, you know, it's like they've barely been on television. And, you know, the matches they've been in have been short. They haven't been featured in them. They haven't been talked about. It's like, you know, you it's okay to have one or two old guys to, you know, stars, you know, for whatever reason, because they can attract some people. But when 50% or more of the guys on TV that you're featuring are old stars, some still talented, many washed up, but when you have that ratio, there's no way that you can get new guys. You just don't have the TV time to get new guys over. And, you know, they tried a little bit with the Pope, although they didn't really do any favors with the way they, you know, he kind of got beat up most weeks.
Yeah, he got beat up every week. It was hurt practically every week, you know, limping around, or his eye was patched. Yeah. I mean, so at some point he's got to be able to,
you know, fight back. And yeah, it's, you know, it's like the way you build a guy like that is having him win every single week, beating the odds over, you know, you have him, you know, beat lower card guys, then go up to mid card guys, then go up to main eventers. And, you know, it's simple. Just let him do great promos, which he did. He did really good promos. Let him, you know, win matches. Then, you know, you find a juicy feud for him to get into, you know, and, you know, let that run its course and, you know, build him up by working with top level guys. And then if he gets over, then you put him with the champion. You know, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
It really is. You know, they talk about taking all this time to write wrestling programs, but granted, there's more to that. There's egos you got to deal with. There's, you know, talent has to execute what you want them to do. It, you know, and it's,
yeah, to plan out the timing of everything.
Right. I mean, no. I mean, we're not pretending that it's really, really simple, but, you know, you don't have to, like, you don't actually, like, writing what happens shouldn't really take that long. And now executing it, all those things, that becomes complicated. But actually, like, figuring out what to do and how to do it with guys, you know, it really can be simple. And when it's, the more simple it is, the generally, you know, it will work better the more simple it is.
Yeah, exactly. 4 points that, you know, you kind of touched on that I remember, you know, listening to Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez talk about in relation to a lot of these things. The first thing is, you know, they talked a lot about, you know, they spent hours, you know, going over these scripts for Impact once Bischoff and everyone came. They changed things and they'd write something else and they'd throw that script out and do it, you know, spend hours and hours and hours. And it's,
yeah,
you know, they clearly got way too involved in all this and just, you know, just way, way too down to the millisecond kind of booking.
I think in particular that's Russo, particularly when he was bragging about the first, the January 4th show they did. Yeah. And I don't know if Hogan and Bischoff themselves are as deeply involved in the writing aspect. I think that's probably mostly Russo and Ferrara, and I believe they have another assistant that they work with.
But yeah, it's I mean, yeah, they you know, I remember Russo bragging about just how, you know, yeah, how many hours he'd spent you know, preparing for the show. And I would imagine he's a really hardworking guy. Like, I'm sure that's true. I believe that he spends that much time, but it's overthinking it. It really is.
Yeah. You know, the couple other things was, you know, nostalgia only lasts so long. You only have a certain, you know, time frame where if you're going to focus on these guys, you have this, you know, this time frame to do it, and then you have to move on. You know, you have to have something in mind. You know, once these guys are, you know, once they hit their peak, you know, with this nostalgic thing, and then you could kind of, and move them into the background, like you said, to be mouthpieces, and they clearly didn't do that. They focused on Hogan, on Nash, and Hall, and Flair since January, and they haven't done anything with
And Jarrett, you know,
and
who,
Sting, yeah,
yeah,
and
who doesn't need to be, you know, none of those guys really need to be, you know, in the main event all the time. I mean, you can bring one of them up once in a while, that's okay, but. But yeah, they don't need to be dominating the show, and those are the guys who are dominating the show, and they've all, you know, listen, none of them are drawing big ratings or you know, pay-per-view money. I mean, none of them are. Why focus on those guys when those guys cost so much money and are not being a success? I would rather go with a guy who doesn't cost as much money and spend a lot less to, you know, achieve the same results and hope, well, you know, he's young, he's talented, we can build him up, you know, in the future. That's, you know, that's, he might work.
It's just like banging your head against the wall, hoping that, you know, one time you're doing the same thing and then you hope all of a sudden it'll just happen.
You'll strike gold.
It's never happened before in anything. And, you know, I guess the saying, if you keep doing the wrong thing, it's never going to, you know, it's never going to be the right thing, or, you know, however it goes. But,
right.
You know, two other things were, you know, Dave pointed out that every time business has boomed for any wrestling organization, it's been because their top wrestlers, the guys that have, you know, turned into stars were, you know, in their wrestling prime.
Oh, yeah,
know?
Or they were, most of them were young guys.
In their
early to
mid-20s.
Yeah, some in their early 30s, yeah. The exception to that was late 90s WCW, but in, you know, WWF in 84 and again in 98, I mean, all those guys were young guys. He cited lots of different examples, and I think the WCW case was, first of all, most of those guys were still, you know, in their 30s or even in their early 40s, and it was the idea of, you know, the WCW and WWF stars, longtime stars, you know, interacting with each other for the first time. That was a novel thing.
Yeah, but you know, even now it's 15 years later, and they're trying to recreate something. The other thing is, you know, it talks a lot about, you know, Russo, you know, he doesn't want to hurt anyone's feelings, so he doesn't want to, you know, no one's going to get a huge push, but no one's going to get buried either. So it seems like everyone on the roster, you know, wins one, loses one, wins one, loses one. Everyone's kind of at the same level where no one's going up. And I mean, sometimes you're going to have to hurt some feelings. You know, some guys aren't going to be worthy of a push at this moment, while other guys clearly are, and you have to push those guys and not be afraid of, you know, maybe the consequences of some other guys.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that's just a Russo thing or that's a wrestling. I mean, even WWE, you know, does that where, you know, guys go back and forth, and it's, you know, they don't get guys over because, you know, they don't want to upset the harmony of the locker room or whatever, and you know, and those are real considerations. I mean, and we're not just, you know, overlooking that, but you do, you got to get behind guys. I mean, I think kind of, you know, what does TNA do now? And I think, you know, you pick like, you know, eight guys maybe, and you know, maybe a woman or two, you know, one of the knockouts or two, and you know, six or seven of the guys. And maybe a tag team and three or four of the singles, and you build them up, you push them. They do not lose under any circumstances. They win every match clean, even the heels, you know, the heels can, you know, get a foot on the rope or do something like that. But, you know, every, you know, there's no interference. No. In fact, I would completely do no outside interference for at least a year.
Yeah.
I would be the promotion that we give our fans winners and losers. We don't screw our fans by giving them BS finishes.
Yeah. Hey, that, there we go. Wins that would, and losses.
That's right. Wins and losses. I mean, that would be, if I were running TNA, that is exactly what I would do, because you know what, at least, you know, I'd be the promotion that, you know, that has good action, that has good matches, that has good promos, and you have the talent to do that. The young talent that you have,
incredible wrestlers.
Yeah, they're good wrestlers, and most of them are good promos.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Jay Lethal is a great promo. You know, I mean,
he's Pope's a good promo.
The Pope's a good promo. You know, even AJ Styles is not that bad. Is a pretty good promo. Now, you know, he isn't strong doing the Flair impersonation, but you know, he's a good promo. Abyss, who's not really a young guy, but he's a good promo.
Desmond Wolf.
Yeah. I mean, these guys all can wrestle. You know, the thing that's the problem is that people don't know who they are, but you know, if you're not showcasing them because you're showcasing old guys, then people aren't going to see them as stars anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess sort of, you know, the concept of bringing in those stars is that, you know, people will see the other guys, but you know, they're not, those are the guys aren't being put in a position for the most part where you're able to see them as stars. Yeah. I mean, so that's you know, that's a huge problem. That's, you know, and you're not going to have any upward mobility if you don't do that.
Yeah. You know, you talked about, you know, the move to Thursday basically is going to be a reset, and you want no outside interference for a year. Well, you know, if you're going to have a reset, then let's have a complete reset and gut the backstage and all that, because without that you're going to have plenty of interference.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you need one person who has a philosophy, who is, you know, who understands the business, who can work with guys. You know, I mean, I you know, would, knowing Jim Ross's talents, I think he would be the perfect. I can't imagine seeing him going to that sinking ship though, that, you know, kind of appears. But you know, you put one guy who you think smart in charge. Paul Heyman's, you know, also a guy who has a track record of pretty strong success in wrestling. You get that one guy who has a vision, who can deal with the egos, who, and you have to give 100% support behind that guy, and then let him, you know, choose the guy he pushes, and you know, get rid of the dead weight if there are stars who, you know, won't put guys over either send them home, or, you know, fire them if you can, or whatever, or, you know, convince them, hey, you know what, you've had your time, now, you know, it's time to, you know, put guys over. But, and you know, if they're doing the whole, well, you know, I'll let you beat me, but I won't let you look good doing it, then, you know, give them a chance, but if they won't do it, send them home. You know, I'm even of the opinion that, you know what, shut it down for 2 months, come back with a new name, you know, a new look, and you can keep some of the talent, but even, you know, try to bring in, you know, maybe some of the top ROH guys, or, you know, maybe Shelton Benjamin, or, you know, somebody like that.
Man, if you say you bring in Shelton Benjamin, Charlie Haas, and the Briscoe brothers with beer money and Motor City Machine Guns,
you'd have a hell of a tag team division, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, and emphasize your tag team wrestling, because that's one thing that's going to separate you from WWE, because they don't really emphasize tag teams. You know, they have, you know, they're doing a little more with Hart Dynasty and, you know, Miz and Jericho. That should be fun. But, you know, there's really no depth there.
No, not at all. You got two teams. One thing along that note, you know, you can't be afraid to maybe ruffle some feathers with the older guys. You know, maybe you keep Hogan and Flair around because, you know, as mouthpieces, because, you know, Hogan can still cut a great promo, gets a great reaction from the fans, and, you know, he's not going to wrestle much, if any, anyway. But, you know, take a guy like you know, Nash and Hall. To me, you know, and it's it's not like all their fault or anything like that, but to me, they're gone. What, you know, Nash has been with TNA for several years, and it has done absolutely nothing. If you get rid of, you know, someone like Nash and Hall, and maybe go down the line, there's probably others too, but if you get rid of Nash and Hall, are you going to lose anything when it comes to ratings or pay-per-view buys? You don't lose a single thing.
And I even like, I kind of like Nash actually, but I still don't mind watching him. But
yeah, I mean, just like as an example, you know, something
right?
Like,
no, but you're right. I mean, you know, there are guys who I think 3D, they're fine, but what are they doing for you? Yeah. You know, what are you know, there's a lot of, you know, older guy. I mean, Rhino, who hasn't even been on TV. And I'm not advocating anybody losing their job. I mean, I guess we kind of are in a little bit because we're advocating them getting rid of guys.
I'm totally speaking from if TNA is going to be a successful promotion, what does it have to do? You know,
right.
I'm saying I hope these guys lose their jobs. Right.
Yeah, but, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's you do have to make tough decisions.
Yeah.
You know, they have like 80 guys on their roster, and WWE has I think 120, and they have, you know, they have almost three times the amount of TV, and I think that includes developmental guys. I forget the numbers offhand, but it's something pretty ridiculous, and it's like, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah, you know, even someone, you know, I hate to say it, but even you have to look at Sting, what he's not adding extra ratings. You mean if he's gone? I mean, when he was gone, you know,
who
I
noticed
in the fall? I mean,
it
didn't matter in ratings, and
right,
no one's buying pay per views because, you know, Sting's wrestling on it. I mean,
no,
those are the kind of questions you have to ask,
yeah.
And you can't be afraid to make a decision like
that. I mean, Sting would be fine for like a 3 month program or a 2 month program where, you know, you bring him in, you have like a very, you know, you have a focused, determined angle for him, and then, you know, after 2 months you build to pay per view and then he leaves for a while. I mean, I don't have a problem keeping a guy like, you know, like rotating in a guy or two like that every 2-3 months. So you have, you know, you get Sting for 2 months, you got Nash for 2 months, you got Foley for 2 months, you got Jarrett for 2 months, you got Hogan for 2 months, and you got Flair for 2 months, or whatever. You know, you rotate, you know, a guy, a legend or two at a time, and then, you know, so you keep bringing in like a fresh thing, and you keep having a star, but you don't have so many guys that you know, you feel like, oh, these guys are legends, so they have to have TV time every week,
or it drowns out everybody else.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, so there's ways of doing it without anybody having to, or without a lot of people having to lose their jobs anyway. You know, so
I mean, let's face it, this thing was a colossal failure, and their grand idea with 3 months to build this up, and, you know, from back when they signed Hogan, you know, maybe even longer than that when they finally moved to Monday, but their grand plan was to try to reenact late 90s WCW. I mean, that was pretty that was pretty much their plan. It took them 3 months to come up with that, and that's what we got, and that's pretty much it. I mean, it was horrible that they couldn't come up with anything better, and I am 100% with you, and there's a 100% chance it will not happen, but that they should stop, take 2 months off, come back totally different from the ground up, whether it's, you know, writing team, creative, whatever, come back with a new name, and just go from there and give it a shot, and if that doesn't work, you're done.
Maybe even go to like an hour or like a 90-minute show and put it on after Ultimate Fighter, you know, kind of go back to like, you know, where you're being supported by the, you know, the demographic. You know, you can kind of, you know, go off there back for a while to kind of reestablish yourself. I mean, there's a lot of things you can take advantage of. And just, you know, it just didn't seem like, you know, with all the time slot changes and with, you know, like adding that reaction show for a week, but like doing it like 2 days, announcing it 2 days before it happened, And
it's quick fix stuff. They took an hour to come up with something, and then they throw this out.
Well, I mean, it wasn't like a lot of it didn't seem like there was a huge plan, and they took them forever to start. We'll announce our main events for next week on this show. Yeah. You know, just things that seem like they should be basic things, they just didn't do for whatever reason. And maybe they feel like those things aren't important, or maybe they just were preoccupied with other details. I don't know, but it just it's unfortunately it was a failure. And both of us want TNA to succeed,
no doubt about it.
Or if not TNA, a second wrestling company, because that makes wrestling better by having competition, having more things to watch. I thought, having two shows to watch on Monday would be a lot of fun again. Yeah. I mean, it was, and parts of it were fun. It wasn't like everything was terrible, but it became a very sad product pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
There were good things here or there, but for the most part, it was just you're just wondering what they're doing, and wondering. It's like you have to justify yourself. Why am I watching this? It's bad. It's dumb. I don't like it. And with the guys they have, there's absolutely no reason that should have happened. It's baffling.
No doubt about it. And it's not to say WWE did everything right in this time frame, because they most certainly did not, and probably have not done things right consistently for a long, long time. But their margin for error is so big that they will never be affected by something that's going to affect the same problems that affect TNA. It's never going to bring about the demise of WWE.
I mean, yeah, unless extraordinary circumstances happen.
But you're right. I would really enjoy for TNA to succeed and do things right, because there's so many people on there that I just enjoy wrestling. I mean, it's kind of like you see something that has great potential that keeps screwing it up, and it just infuriates you, because the potential is there for so much better when you look up and down that roster. And we name guys, and that's just, I mean, there's 20 guys I could probably name that I enjoy in that company.
Yeah, and more,
at
really.
Least,
yeah.
Yeah. Much more.
Yeah.
And
I mean, they brought in the Nasty Boys in 2010.
Yeah.
They brought in Val Venus.
Yeah, they did bring in Val Venus.
Why would you do that?
Who did he beat?
He beat Daniels.
Daniels.
They fired Daniels. Yeah. I mean, Daniels is a talented guy. And you know what? I like Daniels a lot. I think you could have justified him as being a little bit dead weight. I mean, he had done a lot of good things. He was talented. He's a good wrestler. But he's an older guy too. And, I could see him as being a guy you decide, well, you know what? It's time to move on from him. But there's a lot of other guys ahead of him in that line. So, yeah, it's just about focusing on young talent. It's about having your TNA is now clearly in a rebuilding, you call it a rebuilding year.
Yeah.
And what you do in a rebuilding year is you play your young guys, and you let them get talent, let them grow, and they're going to make mistakes. But you keep it simple for them. You keep your playbook simple for your young guys to establish themselves, and then once they do, someone when you have that amount of talent, you're gonna find some of them are gonna catch fire and are gonna do well. And catch fire may be relative. I don't know if TNA is gonna do WWE numbers, but I don't think that mid 1-2 ratings or pay-per-view shows that kind of are in the $80,000 to $100,000 range are unrealistic goals for a nationally supported pro wrestling promotion.
There's no way that this, with the people that they have and the potential that they have, that they couldn't be drawing in the twos. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and
at least a 1.8 to a 2.2.
Right. I think you're probably right. Although I do think there might be a ceiling for a second wrestling promotion. One thing I will have to say is it was much harder for TNA to get any fans to try its product than I expected.
Yeah.
I mean, there was very few WWE fans watching Raw who were willing to sample TNA at all. You found very little, you know, crossover in those numbers. Very little flipping, and I found that strange. I thought that that would happen, and it happened all the time in WCW, WWE. And granted, WCW was coming from a much stronger position when it established the Nitro time slot, but still, you know, it got enough promotion. There's enough wrestling. I mean, it's not like people aren't aware of TNA. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, there are people who aren't, but a significant number of the wrestling fans know TNA. Maybe your average person doesn't know TNA, but wrestling fans, I think a good portion of them know that TNA exists, and I, you know, can only assume that it just was so tainted by, you know, their terribleness, lots of it over, over the past, 8 years, really. I mean,
their reputation's terrible.
Yeah, and it's not like they haven't had good things happen, and they've had, good stretches here or there, but for the most part, I mean, it's been, second-rate shoddy product, and, it doesn't
have to be. Right.
It's been, an incredibly wasted opportunity for, for 8 years.
Would you say, since they announced that, what was that, September, October, somewhere?
It was a little bit later. It was late October, I think, early November, when the Hogan announcement first happened.
Well, since then, would you say TNA is now in a worse spot now than it was before that happened?
Absolutely. Yeah. No question. I mean, their ratings are lower. We'll see how they do again on Thursday, if they can build that back up quickly, or if it, I mean, takes a while. We'll know better in a couple of weeks. But if you consider just the amount of money they must have invested in Hogan, Bischoff, and RVD, and all the talent they brought
Flair,
Jeff Hardy, Jeff Hardy was the most searched wrestler on Google and one of the biggest draws in wrestling in 2009, and meant nothing in TNA in 2010.
No.
I mean, that's baffling too. I mean, there's so many of these things are baffling, but I think they're, they really did not see any level of any success. Their house shows had slight improvements in the early part of the year. I would, even though Hogan and Flair weren't on those shows, I would imagine that just, there was a bigger buzz for TNA. I mean, in January, I mean, that did well. I mean, that show was, it was a successful show. It drew a good rating. It did. I mean, I would have taken the lesson to be like, hey, let's go on Monday. Maybe part of the reason it didn't work out is because it, took 2 months for them to wait too long? I mean, I don't think it mattered in the end that much, because I think if they had put the same show on that they were putting on, it would have...
Yeah, eventually.
They would have killed it anyway. And I think, they had not great TV for those 2 months before they went back to Monday, which didn't help either. So, beyond that, they really didn't translate into anything. I don't know exactly what they did in pay-per-view, but I know it was not significantly better. It may have been worse than they had done a year ago. So I don't see any really any positives considering all the all the money they had to spend in order to bring these guys in and the promotion and all that. So
yeah, not good at all.
No. So let's talk a little bit about this week. The WrestleMania buy rate came in, and it was 885,000, and that's pretty
worldwide.
Which it had been projected to probably do close to 15 to 20% better than that. In the million, a little bit over a million, perhaps. And so that's a disappointment. And what are some reasons you think maybe that could have been?
Well. To me, there's one reason, and that was the show the night before, which was the UFC show, UFC 111, which was George St. Pierre, was the main event. And clearly, it took away buys, a lot of buys from WrestleMania. UFC 111 has been predicted probably around the 750,000 range in just in North America. You know, UFC really doesn't have a huge international, I guess, outside of Canada.
Yeah,
international pay-per-view audience, you know, that just hasn't been established yet. So, you know, you look domestically, UFC probably, you know, is going to beat the WrestleMania by 200,000 buys, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to get somewhere in like 550, you know, 575.
WWE. I think it's in the lower fives, like, yeah, 515. I think that's the estimate, but around there, yeah.
And that's just, you know, that's, you know, still a significant number, but it's almost shockingly bad for a WrestleMania that has been promoted, you know, and was built as well as any WrestleMania in several years. Several big angles.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly had a long-term plan from, you know, Royal Rumble time, even before then, of what they were going to build to, and they, you know, they built to it and did a pretty strong job building to all the matches. I think the exception of Bret and Vince, in the sense that I think, you know, the car accident angle, I think, took away from the specialness of what they were doing.
What was naturally built in.
Right. I mean, it took away from the natural story. And you know what? It's possible that even with that natural story, it may not have done much better, just because it was 13 years ago. A lot, if not most, fans had moved on. All the Montreal screw job angles that have been done in those 13 years may have gotten people sick of it. Bret and Vince both looking old probably didn't help.
Yeah.
All those things, but
Bret's health. Yeah,
yeah, Bret's health. You know, all those things, I think, you know, hurt the appeal of that match. You know, and you know, I don't think that, you know, the last WrestleMania to do this disappointing of a number was WrestleMania 19 in Seattle in 2003, mm-hmm. which did in the 500,000 range total. You know, that's the last one to not do, you know, in the 8-9-1 million range. It did shockingly low, and you know, they didn't have a lot of the worldwide markets that they have now, so that was mostly domestic. In Canada, I'm not sure exactly what share of that was, but nevertheless, and that was built on Hogan and Vince, and I don't think, and I thought then, and I think to a degree now, I don't think people want to see Vince wrestle top stars at WrestleMania. I don't think people view Vince that way. I don't think they really ever did. I think that's the one problem with Vince as a wrestling attraction, is that, you know, I mean, he's a tremendous heel, and he's drawn a lot of money in certain respects, but I don't think people want to see him wrestle the legends and kind of be seen on, like, an equal level with them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a good point, you know. We spent 20 years rooting for Hulk Hogan and believing in Hulk Hogan, and now all of a sudden this guy with 10 matches in his career is the equal of Hulk Hogan. Yeah, it's kind of a slap in the face a little bit.
Yeah, so
that's a really good point.
Yeah, I think, and if you think about it, I'm not sure, you know, I haven't looked at the numbers that close, but I'm not sure Vince has ever headlined a really strong pay-per-view. I'm you know, almost certain that the first you know, Vince and Austin match, it did very well.
Yeah.
You know, but they'd been building that for a year, and that was, you know, the novelty. I mean, Vince said, hadn't been in the ring much, and it was, you know, finally their first singles match after, you know, almost a year feud. So that obviously did well, but I don't know, you know, how well the numbers of shows that he's headlined have done. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he did well in the WrestleMania, you know, the WrestleMania 17 with him and Shane, but that was, you know, fourth or fifth thing on that show that drew that. So that I don't consider that, you know, truly really be part of it. I think a couple of things real quick. I think people may not have bought Shawn's retirement. I think that may have been, you know, been a pretty big issue, which I felt sincerely like it was, and I was very emotionally, you know, that was a pretty emotional investment of a match for me, you know. Yeah. You know,
So I'm surprised that a lot of fans didn't seem to connect with that, but...
But it could be just what, you know, not necessarily Sean, but just WWE as a whole has done.
Yeah, with all the retirements that they've had.
Or just, you know, Chris Jericho's kicked off a Raw forever, and then the next week he's back on.
That's true. I mean,
it's just people not believing.
In stipulations being sold, in general, yeah. not just retirement stipulations, which, yeah, everyone's come back from retirement, which, you know, if it's for a long enough time and the guy's a part-timer, I don't think people care. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a good point that they haven't really met a lot of the stipulations that they've had anyway, so why should they believe this?
Yeah, that's
a good point.
Yeah.
I think a couple, you know, and I, you know, obviously lack of mainstream celebrity, you know, may have hurt a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, that always adds. Maybe the Phoenix market, you know, it wasn't the strongest. That Seattle was blamed that year when okay. it, you know, was poor. And the other thing for me, you know, it's like I think one of the attractions for WrestleMania is the chase. For the chase for the championship, mm-hmm. and I mean that's been undermined a lot recently because of, you know, the two world titles, and especially this year when both title changes happened at the Elimination Chamber,
yeah,
and you know both chases were a month long essentially. Now they've been building Edge and Jericho since Edge's injury for a long time, and you know Cena Batista ended up being a pretty strong hot program, but. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think lack of a long-term build for a championship may have been a thing, too. And I do think that's one problem with Elimination Chamber, that, you know, that pay-per-view takes away from the storyline of Royal Rumble winner facing the champion, you know, thing, where, you know, now, you know, they go to the Elimination Chamber, there's two matches, and they've both been for the title most of the time, and it's like, it's unclear after the Royal Rumble who the champion's going to face.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have a little bit of intrigue, but I think you want to set that... Most of the time, you want to set that pretty quickly and build that match longer term rather mm-hmm. than waiting that month. So, I don't know if eventually the Elimination Chamber is going to... You know, I know that attraction has been strong in February generally, but I wonder if long term that's going to hurt the Royal Rumble... Mm-hmm. That's going to hurt the natural build of WrestleMania more than they realize, mm-hmm. You know. And obviously, you know, changing titles all the time and having two world titles, I think takes away from that chase for the championship too.
Yeah, again, that you know that goes back to something we, you know, really harped on as far as making the championships matter, making wins and losses matter, and you know, looking at the UFC the weekend before or the night before. You could really tell that they wanted to go after this weekend and really make a point with how they promoted this. You know, they put GSP on the card. You know, this was set up, you know, obviously months in advance where they knew this was going to happen. So they have, you know, GSP on the card, who's their second biggest draw behind Brock Lesnar. You know, he's a huge name, and you know, they wanted to do that to kind of send a message. They did a great job. Building this up, they did the primetime series, which is kind of like HBO's 24/7 with, you know, kind of a little more behind the scenes, you know, type stuff. They did the movie theaters, you know, they got the movie theaters involved where people could watch it in the theater for the first time. And you know, every little thing that they did for this event was kind of their way of angling up to where, you know, they're thinking, if we can beat WrestleMania, that's kind of a notch in our belt a little bit. Where, you know, they you know, listening to Dana White, you know, he clearly respects Vince McMahon, and, you know, he models a lot of what he does has been what Vince McMahon did 20 years ago.
Yeah, probably both knowingly and unknowingly.
Yeah.
And clearly,
you know, in a lot of interviews, he talks about how much he respects Vince McMahon, what he's done. Blah blah blah, but same point. He clearly views them as competition, and clearly wants to send a message to boxing, to wrestling, to any other MMA promotion that, you know, this is, we're, you know, the best thing going.
And, yeah, don't mess with us.
Yeah, and yeah. To do that, I mean, he had put the card the day before WrestleMania, puts GSP on there, and they draw a huge number. And fact is, by the end of May, the UFC is already going to have four cards that have drawn better domestically than WrestleMania, which, you know, by the end of the year they could have eight. You know, just looking at the four so far, you have that card. You got the one the next month that was in Abu Dhabi with BJ Penn and Anderson Silva, which actually wasn't very good, but still had a lot of interest in it. You have the one this weekend with Machida and Shogun, the rematch from last year, and then the end of the month, Rampage and Rashad, which people have been excited for 6 months. And, you know, they're going to do a similar build with that as they did with, you know, the prime time leading up to it. And it's going to be pure pro wrestling build with the promos these guys cut and the way it's shaped. It's pure pro wrestling. And
yeah, I mean, you believe in it. You believe in how much they don't like each other and how much they, you know. And, yeah.
It's WWE from 20 years ago is how this is being built up. And because they, you know, people have chosen sides, either Rampage or Rashad Evans. And it's a huge, you know, a huge buzz for this fight. And it's going to do a huge number. And, you know, that's another reason why the UFC is extremely hot in this regard.
Yeah. Well, last thing I thought we should mention, and we'll close with this, is Vince's reaction to during the conference call where they, you know, they had announced it and they were going over their financials. You know, they were, you know, talking about the reasons, and somebody brought up another. They didn't use the word term UFC, but they used
another event
the night before. And Vince basically said, you know, no, it wasn't. You know, it didn't have anything to do with that. And I mean, I liked. On one hand, he did focus it on like, okay, the reason it wasn't successful wasn't because of the economy, and it didn't have anything to do with anything else. It was that, you know, our promotion wasn't good enough. And I do at least respect that, you know, he's wanting to take like his own responsibility for it. He's not using convenient excuses. But on the other hand, clearly UFC is a legitimate competitor. I mean, it is affecting wrestling business. Wrestling pay-per-views have number of pay-per-views have declined since 2006, which is around the time that UFC shot up in popularity.
Yeah, it's no coincidence.
No, and it is odd they are so stubborn and so obstinately clinging to this notion that, you know, UFC, they attract boxing fans, WWE attracts entertainment fans, which I don't even know what that means.
I don't know.
I don't, are there people who are not fans of entertainment?
I like to be entertained.
Do people not like to be entertained? I don't understand that, but it's... I guess they just can't publicly, you know, acknowledge that.
It's just everyone knows that's the reason. So
yeah,
I mean, even the people that are wrestling fans, that they know, because they're not buying the wrestling and they're buying the UFC instead. I mean, it's a clear thing when you look at, you know, the numbers and the age groups, and people who watch pro wrestling have moved to the UFC. I mean, it's a huge majority of people have done that.
Or, you know, you got to make a choice between one or the other. You know, it's not like you don't watch, you still don't like wrestling. But
when it comes to pay-per-view, you're making a choice. You may watch Raw every Monday, but you don't care that much about who wins and loses to buy the pay-per-view. And instead, when it comes to a pay-per-view, I'm going to watch the UFC where these wins and these losses matter, and I'm really geared up because I want to see this guy beat this guy.
And plus, you know, your friends would rather watch UFC than watch wrestling. Yeah. I mean, you generally, you know, they're attracting the less mainstream sports fans the casual fan. Exactly. So, it's a good discussion there. One thing I wanted to mention, that we didn't really mention this the last time, I just wanted to spend just a minute on talking about it, where, you know, WWE is an entertainment product versus WWE is a sports product. And one thing I've, you know, heard is that, you know, the fact that entertainment products, all of them, you know, like television shows, all television shows end at some point that are, you know, like an entertainment product. I mean,
you know, even the most popular, you know, even Lost, you know, or even, you know, like Cheers or Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I mean, all of them, eventually you run out of ideas, or, you know, you peak at a point and it goes down and then you end it.
Mm-hmm.
Where sports, you know, sports have been on TV for 40 years, and, you know, NBA, NFL, you know, baseball, boxing, they're not going anywhere for, you know, very, 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 very long time. You know, boxing isn't as popular as it once was or whatever, but you can, you know, you can still get people to watch it, and you can still get people. All of these, what I'm trying to say is all of these things are never going to end because people run out of ideas.
Yeah.
But, you know, when if wrestling is an entertainment product, eventually, you know, you're selling it as an entertainment product. You're in it. You're creating your own shelf life when mm-hmm. you do that,
yeah.
as opposed to a sports product that you can always keep people interested in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Unless there's a massive decline in interest in the sport for whatever reason, you know, you've fewer stars. I mean, there are things that can happen, but, you know, when you're an established medium, it's much easier to sustain yourself in sports by adopting a sports mentality than it is by adopting an entertainment mentality, an entertainment way of creating stories.
Yeah, that's a very good point. With you're right, where if WWE became more of a sport that tried to entertain, you know, because obviously we're entertained by sports because we watch them. If you make WWE a sport, people are going to be entertained. You know,
yeah,
I agree.
More sport-like, yeah.
Yeah,
and you have a much longer lasting, you know, and I mean, it's not like WWE is going to be threatened, you know, likely to be threatened, you know, by the way they do things now, but I just think it more ensures their, you know, a stronger, you know, support if mm-hmm. they, you know, if it's more of a sports-oriented product than an entertainment-oriented product.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
All right, well, that's it, and we'll talk to you later. Thanks for listening, and I guess we should plug the website. You can go to wrestlespective.blogspot.com, and you can check out other episodes of WrestleSpective Radio. Check out our reviews of matches, fun lists of different things about wrestling, different aspects about wrestling. Lots of different cool stuff. We hope you'll enjoy it. And you can also email us at wrestlespective@gmail.com. And we'd be glad to answer any questions or take requests on things to talk about or write about, or just want to, you know, tell us how great we are, anything like that. We're, you know, we're always happy to hear it. So take care, and we'll talk to you later.